Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Let's play some cards.
Generally, the rule is the nicer the guy, the poorer the card player. And these guys, despite being cops, are real sweethearts.
500. Must be a peach of a hand.
My bet. Top five.
Fold.
The kid's budging him now.
Old man's crumbling. The kid's going to take it yet.
So how many of those movie clips did you recognize? It was John Malkovich, then Matt Damon in the movie Rounders, Val Kilmer in Tombstone, and Steve McQueen from The Cincinnati Kid. They're all talking poker. And whether or not we play, we all seem to be fluent in the vernacular. It's used every day. In fact, here's NPR's Mara Liasson from this morning talking about President Obama's Afghanistan speech.
But now, with his new surge in Afghanistan, President Obama has doubled down on a war he argues is still one of necessity, not choice.
Mara Liasson from Morning Edition. So now we'll talk mostly about the first 8 pages or so of a 500-page book. The whole book is really, really fun, especially if you like poker. It's kind of a cultural history of the connections between poker, politics, and the American spirit. It has great poker stories of all kinds by arguably America's leading chronicler of the game, but it begins with poker in the life of Barack Obama, with references as well to other presidents. And for our purposes, we'll talk mostly about that. You may know James McManus from his other poker book, Positively Fifth Street, about coming in fifth in the Poker World Series. His new book is called Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker. James, welcome to WNYC.
I'm happy to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And I'm sure you weren't surprised that we were easily able to find some poker movie clips. I think you probably refer to all of those in your book.
Certainly the first one and the third one. I missed the the middle one with Val Kilmer, but I couldn't figure out what movie that was. But certainly Rounders and The Cincinnati Kid are discussed at, pretty good length in Cowboys Full.
And you begin with an Oscar Morgenstern quote about poker and nuclear diplomacy. I'm going to read it. He said, "With bluffs so much easier to make and threats so much more portentous than any previous time in history, it is essential not only for our own State Department, but for the entire world to understand what bluffs and threats mean, when they are appropriate, when they should be avoided at all cost. In short, what is the sanest way to play this deadly real-life version of poker?" Wow. Do you want to talk about the context of that quote?
Well, Morgenstern is writing in 1962, having just served for several years as a defense advisor to Eisenhower at the height of the Cold War. The Cuban Missile Crisis is still 12 or 13 months away. And, of course, ever since nations faced each other with nuclear-tipped arsenals, the first confrontation being between us and the Soviet Union, you can't really talk about any of these standoffs without using the word bluff. Very, very few articles that discuss the North Korean situation, Iranian nuclear ambitions. You can't make it through too many paragraphs without the word bluff appearing, because unlike in chess, which is a game of complete information, in poker, key information is hidden, just as it is in nuclear and diplomatic showdowns that we see, as of this morning.
So before we leave that era, here are some historical clips of President Kennedy and President Nixon.
"The highest duty of the writer, the composer, the artist, is to remain true to himself and to let the chips fall where they may."
Let the chips fall where they may. Just use those terms.
From the Nixon tapes, and keeping his hand close in Nixon's case, and President Kennedy from one of his historic speeches. But let's talk about the current president, because you quote President Obama from very early in his campaign, 2007, telling the AP that his hidden talent was that he's a pretty good poker player. What was the context of that?
Obama arrives in Springfield, Illinois, as a state senator in 1997. He's a University of Chicago law professor, a community organizer, a tall, skinny black guy with a funny name. And he doesn't fit in all that easily to the culture of Illinois politicians. One of the ways he breaks the ice with these folks is to start a poker game in the basement of his fellow freshman senator Terry Link's house. And by that means, he begins to persuade them that he's a reasonable guy, he's a regular guy, and he's somebody that you can do legislative business with.
Is he a pretty good poker player?
He seems to be. He falls very comfortably into the class of poker-playing presidents who'd never played the game for high, meaningful, serious stakes. He played in order to relax with friends, extend his political network, and in this he is like Truman, FDR, Teddy Roosevelt, and he is different from the two poker-playing presidents who actually played in their life for pretty high stakes, those being Eisenhower and Nixon. Eisenhower played from very early in his military career as a cadet at West Point, where Obama spoke last night, of course. And he earned enough money to court a wealthy debutante by the name of Mamie Dowd, pays for her engagement ring, buys his dress uniforms, and Nixon, even more famously, wins enough in the Navy during World War II to finance his first congressional campaign, which he wins. $8,000 is what he came out of the Navy with in poker winnings, which in 1945 dollars is a whopping sum.
You call poker a cheater's game. Why is that?
I say that it's true throughout most of the 19th century. Not that the vast majority of games weren't on the square, but the higher the stakes, the more likely the game was to be played. You would be facing cheaters called blacklegs, who were very skilled at dealing you the second best hand, a good enough hand to put all your money into the pot, while they, of course, have four aces. Cold decks, we saw that including the movie The Sting, in which Robert Shaw has four nines, but Paul Newman turns over four jacks and says, "You owe me 15 grand, pal." That was a case of a double deck, a double cold deck, in which Robert Shaw was supposed to get four nines and beat Paul Newman's full house, but Newman and his cronies figured out a way to get a second cold deck into the game, in which Shaw gets the four nines he was expecting, but Paul Newman yes. has four jacks.
Well, you say that was a 19th century trick. By and large, I guess President Abraham Lincoln, Honest Abe, never used that when he played poker.
I don't think Lincoln played a lot of poker, but as a riverman in Illinois, he certainly witnessed numerous high-stakes games, played a few penny ante games, but more importantly, he saw the extent to which violence and cheating were the dominant ways to get the money in a poker game.
Interesting. Now, you have a great quote from the playwright David Mamet about what he saw as John Kerry's failed presidential campaign in 2004 as a failure to raise George Bush's bet. Can you explain the poker analogy there?
Mamet points out that when the Swift Boat veterans claimed that Kerry was a deserter, in a sense, a person who behaved unheroically during the Vietnam War, Mamet believes that Kerry failed the American electorate by not raising that gambit of theirs or that bet, by pointing out that he was a decorated veteran during the Vietnam War, and Bush was in effect a deserter. That would have been a raise.
And you see Saddam Hussein as a better poker player than the entire U.S. political and intelligence establishment before the Iraq War.
I wouldn't put it exactly that way, but the fact is that Saddam was bluffing with respect to whether or not he had weapons of mass destruction.
Is he a poker player, to your knowledge? Was he, Saddam?
My research did not uncover any evidence that he was a poker player in the literal sense with cards and chips on a table, but certainly he was representing having a much stronger military hand than he did. And, of course, we humiliated his army in the early 1990s, but after 9/11, George Bush at least pretended to feel that Saddam was making a believable case that he had weapons of mass destruction.
So he was adept at both the bluff and the threat. And you have John McCain's father saying life is run by poker players, not systems analysts. And yet his son, the John McCain we know, you say turned out to prefer craps.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ironies of the campaign, that Obama claims to be a poker player, and rightly so, and by all accounts a pretty good one at low-stakes games. McCain's father, Admiral McCain, had taught all of his children, including John the third, that poker players are the people who actually run the world. But Senator McCain, actually turned out to prefer craps.
Literally as a pastime, and then you say also as a political style, as evidenced by the pick of Sarah Palin.
To do well in craps, you need to play your gut instincts. You rely on blind luck, and you're never capable of having the odds in your favor. You sort of the dice rolling mindset, I think, is reflected in his decision to put Palin on the vice presidential slot as a kind of a wild effort to gain women's votes after Hillary Clinton failed to get the Democratic nomination.
Have you ever played poker with a president?
I have not. I'm hoping to sometime during the next 7.5 years.
Barack, if you're listening, does he have a poker style, President Obama?
Yes. The people who played with him are unanimous in saying that he played cool, dispassionate poker. He wasn't a wild gambler. He didn't want to shove his money in without serious reflection. His game reflected his patient analytical style as opposed to a more rambling, gambling type of poker style.
Is it a stretch to ask if you saw Obama, the poker player, in his Afghanistan speech?
Well, I think the fact that he took 2 or 3 months to make the decision is an extension of his poker style, which is he's always been coolly analytical, whether he's been playing poker or any other activity. He's not an impulsive guy who shoots from the hip, and in making the decision of this moment, he naturally chose to go slow and hear as many experts as gather as much information and crunch it all together into the surge that he announced last night at West Point.
All right. Well, good deal. And he did, Marl Eisen did say he's doubling down on his Afghanistan strategy. Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker, by James McManus, who you may previously know as the author of Positively Fifth Street. Really fun. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Brian.
Lisa Allison, Jody Evergun, Paige Cowett produced this program. We had intern help today from Tala Al-Husri and Rachel Senator. And our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer.